Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's November the 6th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And Jake Benjamin of Dreyfus will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take a look at the energy markets. In agricultural news, 2 weeks of farm bill debate has kicked off in Washington, and the Bush administration, after vetoing WERDA last week, says it may do the same to the farm bill. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear about the tail end of the harvest season across the Midwest. USDA statisticians from Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska will file reports. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat up 12 cents at $7.97. March futures at 8.20 and a half up 12, and July contract at 6.86 settled 15 and a half cents higher in Chicago for the soft red. December corn futures at 3.85 and three quarters up 10 and a half cents. The March at 4.03 up 10 and a half, and the May at 4.13 up 10 and one quarter. December corn next year 8 and a quarter cents the gain. They finished 4.33 and a half on their settlement price. November soybeans at 10.29 and a half up 23 and three quarters. January futures at $10.44 and a half up 23 and a half, and the March contract up 23 cents at $10.59. November beans $9.81 and three quarters up 15 and a half cents. December bean meal at $2.84.60 up 7.70. December bean oil up 106 at $43.62. And live cattle from the CME Group settled at 95.75, a dime lower. February futures there a nickel higher at 98.80. November feeders at 108, 22 and a half, 90 cents lower. January futures down a dollar at 108 and 7 and a half cents. December lean hogs slipped again down 90 cents at $51.12 and a half for the day. From the outside markets, December crude oil at 96.67, currently trading $2.69 higher. They made a new contract high today, dollar at 76.02. That's down 0.43. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,581 is just about 37 points higher at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Oh, lots of contract highs in Chicago across the bean pit, and there were contract highs in the crude oil as well. What all started for the day?
Well, I think that, you know, we started the last night at, you know, a little bit higher, but nothing like we saw later in the evening when the crude oil took off, Todd. And as it, you know, bounced back hard, you know, being up about $2.50, we saw the follow through on the gold also. And then the dollar, of course, being down on the day about 36 cents. All this together, you know, it really smells of inflation quite a bit. And along with that, we've seen a 90% correlation between crude oil and corn and bean prices as late. And that took off and got things humming last night and run some stops and took us on to new highs there in the beans. And the corn, I think December 08 corn, you know, new contract highs also. So all those things happening, we had some stop losses in there and some fun buying along with it. With the, you know, we're also looking, the crude stocks report comes out in the morning. It's been drawdown the last couple of weeks, and I think a lot of guys trying to pre-play into that, thinking that we might see the crude oil stocks decrease again tomorrow, and want to be on board for that move up possibly to the $100 mark, if that would happen after the report in the morning.
You mentioned a naughty word, which was inflation, and farmers need to take heed of that. They've been watching the price of their inputs go up. I suppose they need to pay more attention this fall than they maybe have in the past?
you know, if you've been paying attention here along the way, we've been highly encouraging everybody to lock in their fertilizer costs, as you know, along with the Russian potash mines flooding and transportation costs going up. That number one, the inflation; number one, the competition worldwide for fertilizer has been tremendously strong this last year and a half, and we're seeing it very, very, very much at local fertilizer dealers here, and what they're having to pay for their fertilizer and what the farmer is going to have to put out extra per acre is just amazing. You know, we are getting some better prices here, but the dollar dropping along the way, it's awful hard to figure out how high is high anymore, Todd. Now, you know, we're at some remarkable levels for the farmers right now, as in days of old, but we're at remarkably high levels for their inputs also.
I might add that if you are thinking about what you need to purchase in nitrogen and looking at much higher nitrogen prices, you're actually looking at the optimum return on the nitrogen. So you need to figure the cost of the nitrogen per pound, and you can do that fairly easily on a website. Just search for nitrogen formula, I think that's the right one, under Google, and you'll find an Iowa State site. It's populated with data from Illinois and Iowa, Indiana. Most of the Midwest, you can drop your numbers into that site, and it will return the optimum return for the price of nitrogen, not the number of bushels, but the gross income per acre or gross per pound. I don't remember quite which one it is, per pound of nitrogen used. So they might want to start thinking about using some of those tools on the websites. What do you have in your cadre of tricks that you might be able to help them out with?
Well, I think, you know, like I say, that unfortunately, you know, a lot of the fertilizer prices have taken a jump, but I think they're going to take further jumps after the first of the year. We're just hearing that, like you say, the nitrogen prices are going to keep going up because of the crude oil and the natural gas prices. The potash, because of the Canadian potash mines saying until they get things settled down, they're not even going to honor all their commitments, but not sell anymore until the Russian deal is straightened out. And that way, Todd. So, but along the way now here, we have to be seriously thinking about, number one, as we approach or go through $100 at that point in time, we're maybe going to add some hedges for next year, and that can be done either in the futures market or, as expensive as the puts look with this inflation to continue to run, if it were to continue to run rampant and we could see another dollar or two in the beans possibly, maybe we want to buy some very expensive puts. And I say very expensive, that might be cheap in the long run. But, you know, we were looking at some of those out there today, and it is time at these levels to at least consider going from anywhere from 10 to 30% priced as we get above $10 in the new crop beans, and we get over $4.30, $4.35 in the new crop corn, Todd. So, I mean, it's just an idea that with these expensive inputs, we need to have some sort of net to fall back on some of our pricing here.
You're suggesting options because if you go for a straight hedge, there's an awful lot of margin money that could come due at some point.
You know, if you were to hedge 30% of your crop and you've got a lot out there, the initial margin alone is big. But, I mean, so is it's going to be. And now, like I say, in the other way with this, it does allow you for any further inflation that would happen to happen over the summer to let it go ahead and be built into your prices.
By the way, if you do the search for it's the nitrogen calculator, not nitrogen formula, but drop that into Google. And eventually, probably if you put nitrogen calculator into Google, you'll find the in rate calculator. It's at extension.agron.iowastate, and there's a whole bunch of other things that go along with it, but it'll be fairly easy to find, and it's once again populated with data from Illinois, and it will give you optimum return rates per the price of nitrogen and expected price, I believe, of your bushel of corn, too. So that's a good tool that they might be able to use. Tell me more about the soy complex and how South America is playing into the whole soybean realm at this point.
Well, of course, we think that they're buying more acres in South America every day here, and we're seeing some continued hedging of beans out of South America. We saw that again the last, and I don't know as much today, but I know the yesterday and on Friday we saw some South American hedging. You know, as we look out there, the prices, they're shooting into the May and July contract, you know, 1060, that should give them a $10 cash bean down there, even with a little more. So I think that we might pick up a few more acres down there. One of the things we talked about this morning, Todd, was we think that right now that the trade is figuring there's been about 5 million acres shifted to beans, and the balance sheets say they'd really like to have 8 million acres shifted. That's one of the reasons we continue to stay
strong.
In the
United States.
Huh?
In the United States.
Yes, yes, yes. And, the bean oil today, 43.62, 43.70 high. I believe that's a 40-year high on bean oil.
Okay. Anything else to add before we let you go for the day?
That's about all for today, Todd. It's inflation, and it is crude oil prices driving this market.
We'll talk to you in a week.
Thank you, Todd.
And that's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. It happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for the two-state region, the Midwest, the nation, and the globe. Our own Ed Kieser says a wind advisory is in effect for most of the far northern parts of Indiana until 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 Central Time this evening, and a freeze warning is in effect for southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana from 11 o'clock tonight until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Tonight, Ed says, in the north and northeastern part and east central part of Indiana, cloudy, some snow showers there. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy and cold. Lows will range from 20 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to the 30s in northern Indiana. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take a complete look at today's agricultural newscast.
In agricultural news, Senate Farm Bill floor debate began yesterday with Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin and Ranking Ag Committee Democrat Saxby Chambliss urging passage. Harkin's speech highlighted new programs, including efforts to jumpstart organic farming.
We include $80 million over 5 years for research into organic production and marketing. We include $5 million for price, yield, and overall data collection, which we don't even know about now. We remove the 5% surcharge arbitrarily charged to organic producers that want to reduce their risk by buying crop insurance. Crop insurance had a 5% surcharge on them. We remove that. We make the EQIP program more universally available for farmers to transition into organic agriculture.
Meanwhile, yesterday, the Bush administration threatened to veto the farm bill under debate in the Senate because its financing is fiscally irresponsible. Acting USDA Secretary Chuck Connor says the bill, in his words, increases trade-distorting support, maintains a defective safety net, and has little real reform, and uses tax increases and budget gimmicks.
$37 billion of new taxes and budget gimmicks do not constitute wise fiscal policy and serve only to erode public support for agriculture. I believe farmers deserve a strong safety net, but Congress risks losing all support for it by refusing to focus government support where there is a true need and asking other sectors to bear the cost.
The Congressional Budget Office says the average crop revenue program added to the Farm Bill by the Senate Agriculture Committee will not save money over the long run. Lawmakers introduced the plan, saying it would save about $2.5 billion over 5 years. But the CBO report says the estimated savings reflect short-term artificial circumstances. Over a 10-year span, the CBO puts the net cost of the program around $5 billion. Beginning next week, USDA will increase testing of Canadian meat and poultry products for salmonella and E. coli. The Food Safety and Inspection Service will require shipments be quarantined until testing is complete and meats are proven to be safe. Two Canadian firms, Ranchers Beef Limited and Topps Meat Company, were forced out of business after it was discovered their meat products created the second largest beef recall in U.S. history. At least 40 people were sickened in 8 states. Meanwhile, yesterday, Cargill issued a recall for more than 1 million pounds of ground beef produced by a Pennsylvania plant. Cargill says the meat may be contaminated with E. coli bacteria. And a study commissioned by Western Growers says California farmers will likely take 82,000 acres out of cultivation next year if the state receives an average amount of rain and snow this winter. The study puts the economic impact at $69 million. California farmers are dealing with drought and water restrictions. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. USDA's Crop Progress Report released yesterday showed 86% of the corn crop had been harvested nationwide. Last year, that number stood at 79%. The rolling five-year average is 80%. 92% of the soybeans are in the bin, and that's about 2 percentage points ahead of both the five-year and last year's average. And wheat planted now stands at 92% as well. That's just a percentage point behind the five-year rolling average and last year's planting progress. 76% of the winter wheat crop has emerged. Now, here are the statisticians from Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Nebraska to take up a complete look at their areas.
This is Joe Prusaki, State Director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly Crops and Weather Report for the week ending November 4th, 2007. Harvest continues. Dry fall weather held for another week. Post-harvest work picked up as fields dried. Fertilizer application, manure spreading, and fall tillage are the focus when crops have been harvested across Iowa. The wet spring and fall have prompted farmers to repair waterways and tiles. There was no measurable precipitation reported anywhere in Iowa for the past week. Normal precipitation for the week is about a half an inch. Soil temperatures averaged in the mid-40s in the northwest to the upper 40s in the southeast. There were 6.8 days suitable for fieldwork compared to 6.1 days a year ago. Grain movement slowed with 13% heavy movement, 35% moderate, and 33% light, with 19% reporting no movement at all. Availability of off-farm grain storage rated 24% short, 73% adequate, and 3% surplus in Iowa. On-farm grain storage availability rated 32% short, 66% adequate, and 2% surplus. 83% of the Iowa corn crop has been harvested, 1 percentage point ahead of both last year and the five-year average. Harvested field corn percent is averaging 15%. 96% of the soybeans have been harvested, 1 percentage point behind last year's harvest at this time, and 3 percentage points behind the five-year average. The South Central District lagged behind the state average of both corn and soybean harvest. Fall fertilizer application progressed to 25% for the state. This has been Joe Prusaki from USDA's Iowa Field Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the weekly Crops and Weather Report for the week ending November 4th, 2007.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending November 4th. Corn, soybean, and sorghum harvest are nearly complete, as was winter wheat seeding. Emergence of the wheat crop was also reported ahead of the five-year pace and rated in fair to mostly good condition. Temperatures this past week averaged 2.5 degrees below normal, while average precipitation at virtually zero was 9/10 of an inch below normal for the seven-day period ending Sunday. And it should be no surprise that topsoil moisture supplies took a turn for the worse last week and were rated 19% very short, 38% short, 42% adequate, and only 1% surplus. This was a decline of 14 percentage points in the short and very short categories. Corn harvest is now at 98% complete, which leads the 91% 1 year ago and 92% five-year average. This has been an amazingly good year for corn harvest, and the pace has consistently led the five-year average by about 2 weeks starting in the first week of September. Soybean harvest is now winding down at 98% complete, which compares to 94% 1 year ago and 95% for the five-year average. In other crops around the state, sorghum harvest was nearly finished, as was soft red winter wheat seeding, both at 99%. 88% of the wheat crop was reported emerged, 10 points ahead of the five-year average. This has been Brad Schwab reporting for the Illinois Field Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service, in Springfield.
This is Steve Parn reporting Nebraska's weekly crop weather report for the week ending November 4th, 2007. Corn harvested was 82% complete, 5 days ahead of last year's 70 and 2 days ahead of the 75 average. Soybean harvest was 94% complete, even with last year and near the 96 average. Sorghum harvest was 82% complete, ahead of last year's 73 and 79 average. Winter wheat conditions rated 70% good or excellent, near last year's 72% condition. This has been Steve Parn of the USDA's NASS Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of USDA NASS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending November 5th. Favorable weather for the week allowed many farmers to complete harvest activity. Corn harvesting is nearing completion, and only a few double-crop soybean fields remain to be harvested. Emergence and growth of the winter wheat crop has benefited from the good fall growing conditions. As harvest activity comes to an end, farmers turn to fall tillage and spreading lime as the weather permits. 91% of Indiana's corn acreage has been harvested, compared with 62% for last year and 77% for the five-year average. By area, 86% of the corn acreage was harvested in the north, 92% in central Indiana, and 97% in the south. Moisture content of the corn harvested remains about 16%. 96% of the soybean acreage has been harvested, compared with 84% for last year and 92% for the five-year average. By area, 96% of the soybean acreage has been harvested in the north, 97% in central Indiana, and 95% in the south. Moisture content of the harvested soybeans remain about 11.5%. Nearly all of the winter wheat acreage has been planted, and 91% of the winter wheat acreage has emerged, compared with 58% for last year and 74% for the average. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NASS Field Office. Thank you.
And thank you, Greg, and the rest of the statisticians for keeping us up to date on the happenings across the Midwest. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Prairie Boatworks Gallery, Mahomet, Longleap Farm, Philo, Fertilizer Dealer Supply, Philo, and Birch Tree Consulting, Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
Time now to take our weekly look at the energy markets. Jake Benjamin of Louis Dreyfus joins us from Kansas City this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Jake.
How are you doing, Todd?
Let's talk about the rally in the ethanol as it compares to what's been happening in crude oil. Tell me about it, please.
Sure. We've seen ethanol futures prices here since the end of September rally on the magnitude of 30 cents here, maybe 27, 28 cents just on the board of trade. Where at the same duration you've seen crude oil on a per gallon basis run from about $1.91 per gallon to $2.28. Today we got crude up $2.50 a barrel at $96.59. We made a new contract high today, the nearby option on crude.
So ethanol's tracking fairly close on a per gallon basis.
It is. It's not a one-for-one relationship on the upside. I think the concern or the suspicion of the marketplace is that it will be precisely one-to-one, if not more, on the downside, just to keep ethanol competitive in the blend.
Is this making it more profitable for ethanol producers, or is the price of corn still a real hang-up?
No, it is definitely more profitable. We've seen gross margins for an ethanol plant rebound 12 to 15 cents here in the last few weeks. It's gone from a situation where there was no opportunity to put a profit on the books for 2008 a month or 6 weeks ago, to where they could conceivably lock in a profit here for any time frame in 2008.
You talked some about prompt market. Now I suppose you can talk about hedging and being able to deal with farther out months then?
They have the opportunity to do that. The ethanol industry has been renowned for doing a significant quantity of business in the front 30 days or the front 60 days.
Okay, anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Look forward to maybe a break in crude oil prices for all of our benefit.
Okay, indeed. Thanks much, Jake. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
And that's Jake Benjamin. He's with Louis Dreyfus out of Kansas City. Joins us on Tuesday afternoons once a month to take a look at what's happening in the energy market. We take up the energy markets each and every week right here on WILL's Closing Market Report. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the ag weather forecast. Right now, your newscast is up.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Former Illinois Governor George Ryan's last long-shot bid for a delay in the start of his federal prison sentence has failed. This morning, Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens refused to grant him bail less than 24 hours after Ryan's lawyers made an urgent plea for bail. The Illinois Republican contends federal officials were wrong to portray his trial as free of any errors requiring reversal. The 73-year-old Ryan now is due to report to the Federal Correctional Center in Oxford, Wisconsin, before 5 o'clock tomorrow evening to start serving a 6.5-year racketeering and fraud sentence. Ryan remained free on bond since his April 2006 conviction. He and his family left their home in Kankakee this morning before returning this afternoon. There's no word yet on when he plans to head to Oxford. Officials with the Veterans Affairs Department in Washington say three more surgeons have had their privileges scaled back at a VA hospital in southern Illinois. VA officials who testified today before that Senate committee didn't offer specifics about the latest surgeons recently placed on leave at the Marion facility, but Senator Dick Durbin says he intends to introduce legislation to address weaknesses in hiring practices at VA hospitals. The scrutiny at the Marion site has mushroomed since August, when a surgeon resigned 3 days after a Kentucky man bled to death after gallbladder surgery. A party-line vote has shot down a plan to revamp the management of the Champaign County Nursing Home. Democrats voted against forming a governing board to watch over day-to-day operations, but the home's administrator doesn't think the Democrats' alternate idea of an advisory board would carry enough power. A labor observer at the University of Illinois says the issues separating film and TV writers and producers may take weeks or months to resolve. It's the second day of the Writers Guild strike. Labor relations professor Patrick Foy says both sides have grappled for years over the profits from internet downloads and DVD sales. He says any resolution of the writers' strike will impact what actors, directors, and other players in the industry will get from those same downloads. Air service between Decatur and St. Louis has resumed. Great Lakes Airlines is now making twice-daily flights between the two cities, but Decatur, along with Marion and Quincy, are scheduled to lose service to Chicago Midway on Friday because Mesa Air says it can't make money on those flights. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. A Tuesday afternoon, we're joined by Don Day of Day Weather to take a look at the ag weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the globe. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Cold weather has arrived here.
Yes, it has, and we'll probably have some more. We're seeing the jet stream act like it should towards this time of year, which means more opportunities for full price.
And then as you take a look at the weather over the next week, will those cold fronts come with rainfall or be dry?
Yeah, I do think there's some chances for precipitation late this weekend and for the days of early next week. There's going to be a fairly moist situation in the Midwest, and some of those areas in the areas will get a little bit of the white stuff.
And tell me about South America, please.
South wet. They've seen moisture increase. In fact, stormy weather over most of Argentina and Brazil will bring to those areas with temperatures a bit cooler than normal.
Are there dry areas around the globe that we ought to check in on for the...
In the southern hemisphere, Australia's had some rain, a little bit more in some of the central and eastern areas, they're keeping their fingers crossed and they see a little bit more. Rain has been a bit better and they should get a bit more over the next week or two.
Thanks much, Don. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Don.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning for our first look at the commodity markets at 8:49, and that you can listen to today's futures analysis, the weather reports, right there on the web. Just go to willag.org. Have a good afternoon. Stay warm. I'm Todd Gleason.